The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yay!
And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And we also have, live from the site of HeroCon 2013 at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
2016!
What'd I say?
2013.
What'd I say?
Tim doing time traveling, but yes, welcome to live from Queen City, Charlotte, North Carolina, ladies and gentlemen. It's a sunny day, it's hot, it's wonderful, you can smell the nerdery in the air.
Oh no!
I'll be there tomorrow night to join Roddy Cat as himself and I and Adam Black from the Click Nation.
Yo.
We'll all be in attendance for HeroesCon 2016.
Nice.
And let's see. So go to our website, theclicknation.com. Oh, yes.
No, I was about, well, yeah, go ahead and do that. Then I'll get to this.
We'll get that out of the way.
Get to the program and stuff.
Go to our website, theclicknation.com. You can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. On the website, you can find all the different locations that we are on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google+. Subscribe to our newsletter, the Click Nation newsletter. Remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles and CBCron when you're on social media talking about comics. And we are a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network, a.k.a. the CSPN. Go to cspn.us. Do it today. Nice. And Dirt is not here, at least at the moment. He may join us later. Make sure to go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. Now, what were you going to say, Roddy?
Well, I was going to say that since, this is a pre-Heroes Con show, I was going to bring up the stuff that they gave us, but I started doing something else, so let me not do that right this time. Every year, here we go. We have this, we start off with this nice program that they give us. They also did a silent this year and gave out PDFs, which kind of comes in handy. You know, if you want to start planning beforehand, you got the seat arrangements, you got the panel stuff, you got this nice cover. And they also gave, well, at least you can also get this handy dandy seating chart or floor chart. Shows where everybody is on the floor and what's on the top there. Like, you can pick that up when you go get your tickets. And on the back, it's got a, you see that? But it's
the Legends.
Mm-hmm. Which I was just finishing watching, which is funny. So the CW lineup, because you remember Tim, when we ran up on that CW booth that other year.
Right. Yeah, I think I got a Arrow or Flash poster.
And I did too. So I'm pretty sure they're in effect this year. And of course, you also have this nice little wristband that they give you, which is made out of paper again. I have talked about that in the past, but this year I came prepared because I'm going to turn it into a actual wristband.
So how does that work?
How does what work?
It's a more sturdy fastener.
Yeah.
So it's a fastener you can take
off. Just put a snap on it.
It allows you to take it off somehow?
Yeah. So if it works fine, because now that I think about it, this part of this thing is like just tape. So, and it's all paper. So hopefully if it holds right, I'll just have a nice little fastener.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where I can just easily take it on and off.
That's weird. I guess I've gotten so used to badges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've
never seen them on. Right, and they also did. Now they did give us, you know.
Oh, they do give you a badge. Okay.
Yeah, but they state like, do not lose your wristband because you can't get into it without it. And I'm like, wow. Well, what's that?
It's 2-step verification.
Sure. Yeah, I guess so. Which I guess kind of makes sense because if you lose one, you
come on, you computer nerd guys, you should have given credit for that one.
No, we got it. But I'm like, all you gotta do is just bop somebody's head for both of them.
That's true.
And who's gonna know? And last but not least, we have the annual print, which I'm digging this one. You see, it's got for those on audio, you got the Black Panther at the top, and it's got like an almost 3D bunch type of. A bunch of characters on it. You got Winter Soldier, you got Spidey, Black Widow, Iron Man, Cap.
Oh, it's a Civil War. I mean, it's a Captain America Civil War. Print.
And it looks like movie version. Yeah. Some crossbones here. So.
Mm-hmm.
That was neat. But that's that. It's a 3-day show. You should, if anybody gets a chance to come and see us, come holler at us. And if you ever get down to Charlotte, North Carolina, come see the show. It's promises
to
be
print.
It looks like, there were individual ones for each one. Like this one down here is Sanford Green, looks like.
Each picture is a different artist.
Right. And I can't tell some of these other ones because they're scripts. Because they're...
The signature is hard to make out. I gotcha.
Maybe Jay okay. Rowe,
I thought it was one person that did the whole thing. So
yeah, me too.
It usually is, but apparently they must have... They forget to change it this time. And it's probably inside on the cover, so why we go on and look that up. So what else we got?
Okay. So so we'll be there. Tune into next week's Comic Book Chronicles, where we'll do our recap. I'll be trying to talk to different creators while I'm there, get some audio clips from them, hopefully, cross my fingers. Also buy a bunch of stuff. What was that?
Hopefully we'll see some old guests from the show.
Sit in on panels, all that good stuff. Hopefully you get to hobnob with some of them after hours. We'll see.
We'll see.
But yeah. All right. And then, so, on to the show, as this is the segment where we'll review this week's comics, new comics for the week. Do we want to start with the big Civil War 2 number 2?
Yeah, go for it. I hadn't read it.
All right, go ahead.
Hold on. I can see if I can bring up the folders with the with the covers. Like, since Dirt isn't here.
I feel like I got them up. But,
see what Civil War cover I feel like choosing. Jeez, how many of them are there? I don't even see the original cover.
That's funny. While Tim is rooting around for the cover, I can pull out the cover that I picked up. So I picked up the regular cover and the Steranko cover. So here's the regular cover with Iron Man and Ulysses and some other Inhumans, Crystal and the water guy. Triton, right? So I got that cover, and I got the Steranko Cap cover, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
Yep. So that being said, what did you think of this issue?
It wasn't as good as what we'd seen in the first, I thought.
I agree. Kind of a letdown.
It was very, very rushed.
What, you mean to get from point A to point B?
Yeah, it felt rushed to me.
I didn't think that it was rushed so much as just there were just characters kind of acting out of character. I mean, you could say that about the first Civil War as well. I just wasn't so keen on some of the character interactions and the characterization of Tony Stark, and there's rampant rumors online, obviously, of who the next big member of the body count's going to be. And one of the reasons cited for this kind of like weird change in character is to provide another target for the body count, another candidate for the body count.
Seems very forced.
Yeah.
The art's nice from Dave Marquez, of course.
Oh, of course.
And the Inhumans are kind of made to look like punks. Iron Man just took them out or, defeated them or got the upper hand on them.
Well, to be honest, the Inhumans have never really been that formidable, and unfortunately, in terms of like the physically powerful ones, their numbers aren't here. They're not represented here because you're thinking about Black Bolt and you're thinking about Gorgon, and neither of them are in this at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
So, that being said, they've definitely ramped up, you know, Medusa's abilities, and obviously Karnak is still Karnak. You know, I thought it was funny that, like, he's just constantly threatening to bring down Stark Tower. You know, I'm like, really? That's what Karnak's going to do? He's going to bring down the building with, like, one well-placed strike? Come on. And
I like how Iron Man's like, you know, I've been studying you, you know, I know how you see the flaw in all things, but I'm perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Can't beat me.
Yeah, seriously. No, I got that. I got that too. So, I mean, without spoiling too much for Roddy, because Roddy's going to eventually read this. So, you know, we have a confrontation between the two factions in this book, and I guess the factions basically surround the sides of Iron Man and Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers. We have this confrontation about how to best deal with what Ulysses sees, and what Ulysses sees is kind of the cliffhanger ending of this issue leading into the next one. He sees a vision of impending doom. No pun intended there. He did not have a vision of Victor. But, you know, he sees something bad coming down the road, and we see, and the cliffhanger is how this group of heroes is going to deal with that. So I didn't necessarily feel that it was rushed. I just thought that, it just didn't read very well. And that, you know, I guess that's two sides of the same coin to a certain extent.
I like that the impending doom involves a naked Hulk.
It was very Ultimate Hulk, reminiscent of the Ultimate Hulk, remember?
Yeah.
You know, and we've all, and Roddy, you've seen the image from the Ultimate Hulk versus Ultimate Wolverine. You remember that limited series that Lionel Yu drew and they never got around to really finishing it?
Actually, I don't believe I did.
Tim, you know what I'm talking about, right?
What series again?
Ultimate Hulk versus Ultimate Wolverine.
Oh, I never read any of the Ultimate books.
Well, it's an image that you would see online. I'm very surprised that neither of you are familiar with it. I'm sure Dirt would be, though.
Yeah, he was an Ultimates person.
Yeah, after the first, like, Ultimates, and I think maybe Ultimates 2, I didn't read much Ultimate line stuff.
Right. I understand.
That's something I need to get caught up with on Marvel Unlimited.
Yeah.
Sure, I mean, not all of it is good. So, I mean, Ultimate Spidey's probably the best of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, like I said, without spoiling too much of Civil War 2, that's pretty much what happens there.
Look, Rhodey's been Bill Foster. Rhodey's been Bill Foster. I care less about Civil War than I did going into this. That is truth. That is honest truth.
All righty. So did any of you guys read the crossover Civil War books?
I read the X-Men one.
What'd you think of that? I didn't read it yet.
It was fine.
there's a not so emphatic endorsement right there, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, there wasn't too much to it. It's. Did you read it?
No, I didn't read it.
The artist reminded me somewhat of one of the Kubert brothers. I forget which one, but might be actually the one that's doing art on all new, all different Avengers. But it starts off with Magneto's team going and trying to rescue some mutants in Shanghai, I believe. They get sort of like ambushed by some sentinels that are like merged with humans. I forget what the proper term is for those sentinels. But then the Extraordinary X-Men show up. They get in this debate about the Inhumans and, you know, can they be trusted? And then Storm's team lets it slip that Ulysses can predict the future. And that's how they, Extraordinary X-Men, were able to jump to that location to aid Magneto's team. There's some back and forth. And then at the end, we see Nightcrawler show up to Magneto's team wanting to help them take out the Inhumans.
No kidding.
That was about it. It was very just kind of by the numbers. I want to say again quickly done. I know I said that for Civil War number 2, but yeah.
Okay. All right. I mean, I like the cover. The cover's really nice. I'm not sure who the cover artist is. I'm gonna look this up right now. David Yarden, and the interior is and Andrea Brocardo. So. You know, I only had a chance to flip through this. I did not have a chance to yet read this. So it's interesting to see how the uncanny and the extraordinary books are kind of merged into one for the Civil War II crossover, or the, you know, the tie-in book.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's Civil War X-Men number 2. For me to keep up with this series, I started the Spider-Man 1 last week and haven't finished it yet, but I'm wondering, am I going to like these tie-ins? Because so far they're just kind of like, eh.
Yeah, I may not get most of these tie-ins. I figure the Spidey one is going to be kind of important. The X-Men one, again, may not be, but, you know, with the key being an Inhuman in this, it's always interesting to see how they're going to play off the remaining mutant population. So, you know, I may stick with the X-Men one, but we'll see.
If the X-Men and Inhumans are actually going to finally, you know, throw down, then I'm all for this tie-in. But
I got you. Understood. All right. So let's see. How about we get to what else? Did you put anything on the list?
Only other Marvel book I read this week was Amazing Spider-Man 14.
Wasn't this a good issue?
Yeah.
I like this issue.
This arc and this launch since All New, All Different Marvel has been good.
Well, yeah, because now they're diving into the Secret Wars, the Renew Your Vow story, you know? And, you know, what was cool about this one is that there was a lot of ramped up anticipation because what ends up happening in this issue is that Regent is making a power move.
Power move.
Yeah, he's making a power move, you know, basically taking down, spoiler alert, let me get to the spoiler bell, basically taking down the all-new, all-different team of Avengers. And basically, if you don't know what Regent does now, is that he basically stores superhumans as living batteries and uses their powers. So, I rang the spoiler bell a couple seconds ago, so that it still applies, damn it. But, you know, the story is rapidly moving forward towards confrontations because some of his plans are kind of unraveling or at least becoming exposed. But there is a very serious cliffhanger to this. It's a great splash page by Giuseppe Camuncoli.
Yes, Camuncoli's been killing it on this issue or this book period.
Yeah, that last page where Regent stands... spoiler alert, semi-triumphant.
Right.
It's just a really nice, it's really well done. It does help, you know, sell this book that Alex Ross seems to just have a contract to do Amazing Spider-Man covers. you know, it's like, that's a beautiful cover, man.
Those and the Amazing, or All New, All Different.
Exactly.
Avengers books.
Exactly. It's just, you know, this is beautiful stuff. And this is a lot, this is a pretty fun issue. So as much crap as we give Slott for kind of, you know, screwing with, you know, Peter Parker, you know, in old school but in different ways. What I mean when I say that is it's kind of the same old stuff but done slight, you know, just with a slight twist. Because he keeps bringing back a lot of the old villains and just kind of just slightly twisting how he's treating them. This one new villain, though, Regent, is kind of, you know, kind of a twist, especially against Spidey, you know, who's a, you know, super-duper street-level hero, and we've got this guy who's basically taking down every hero in the Marvel Universe.
I like when Mary Jane talked about how Peter did this verbal Olympics of talking about himself, a.k.a. Spider-Man, without saying he's Spider-Man.
That's right. And it was weird... It was weird listening and reading. You almost have to listen to the conversation because at some point everyone's forgotten that Spidey is Peter Parker, and they're referring to events during the first Civil War, and as some people remember things and some people don't, and Jarvis is talking about how he used to kick it to Aunt May, and Spider-Man's like, hey, she's Mrs. Jameson now.
Yeah, that whole thing was funny. Then we see something, some kind of illness with Aunt May.
Aunt May, yeah. Yeah, there's some foreshadowing there, too. So, you know, this was a good... I like this issue. This is a good issue. I know that I tend to be one of the few people on the panel that reads Amazing. But, you know, I've been enjoying the Region arc.
Good. And then after this, I guess, is the Dead No More.
I believe so.
Dead No More.
Hold on. There we go. Rod, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Just checking.
What other Marvel stuff y'all read this week?
Let's see. Check the list, check the list, check the list.
I got the Star Wars books.
Star Wars has just, like, moved down my list of stuff to check out for some reason. Can't even tell you why.
The hype has died down.
Yeah.
As they say, the honeymoon might be over for it. I mean, don't get me wrong, the books are still good, but, you know. And I guess the weird scheduling of those books is sometimes, because sometimes you see them all come out together, then sometimes you see, like, one or two pop up at different times. It's kind of weird. Right. Which, that happens in books anyway.
I'm, like, 3 issues behind on Darth Vader, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What's funny about this issue of Star Wars, Star Wars number 20 came out this week, and it's, I don't know, I think it's a continuation of the last issue. Roddy, correct me if I'm wrong.
No. This is a...
It's another standalone?
Standalone.
It's another standalone, yeah.
Okay.
It's a Tales of Kenobi, basically.
Right, so it was a Tales of Kenobi issue that was good, as opposed to the first, I think, Tales of Kenobi issue, because it's it tells a story of older Obi-Wan as he's fighting to protect Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru and a very young Luke Skywalker. And,
I was gonna say, more specifically Luke, but yeah.
Right, so he's fighting to protect them against a Wookiee bounty hunter. I'm not spoiling anything because that's what's on the cover, but it's a very entertaining issue, but it is a one and done after all. What did you think of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was good. Like every 7 issues or something, they were going to do like a Kenobi, you know, just a standalone Kenobi issue, and this is just along with that. So, and I almost forgot that they were doing that kind of stuff. It was like, oh wait, this just came out of blue, but it actually didn't, because that's kind of how they set it off.
Right.
So, but yeah, I thought it was pretty good. You know, you got the Wookiee who we've seen before, you know, fighting against. The weirdness of that part, though, is like, okay, because we see the Wookiee, Black Crescenton, I guess is his name, in other books, and it's like, well, and you forget there's like a time jump in between this and those other ones. But nevertheless, it's just like, it's all there. But yeah, it was ultimately, it was a pretty good reading issue. You know, it was like, is it one and done? You know, the art was great. So it was a good read. Like, it wasn't like, I can't say it's a standout good read, but it's just like, but it was pretty good for what it is.
I definitely enjoyed reading it. I also read Star Wars Han Solo number 1.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a nice kind of, you know, it was kind of a formulaic read, but I still enjoyed it.
You think so? It was formulaic?
I thought it was formulaic because it's, let's get in a race, you know? I watched too many Fast and Furious movies. Let's settle this. We'll get in a race, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, like I said, maybe that's why I thought it seemed formulaic to me. It's definitely not formulaic in the sense that how often do you really see, other than the pod race in the first Star Wars movie, how often do you really see a racing setup for any part of a story in the Star Wars universe? So, you know, maybe if you're looking at it strictly from that point of view, then yeah, it doesn't seem formulaic. But I, you know, other than that, I thought it read like a pretty fun, you know, it was a nice fun narrative.
Right. I was thinking if it wasn't the race part that was more formulaic, it was pretty much the beginning of it, at least after the part where, you know, when Leia comes into the picture, because basically what happened is you know, Han's, this takes place after the Battle of Yavin, after Han pays off his bounty to Jabba, but we see him kind of trying to get back in the swing of things, except for he's not taking any smuggling missions because, you know, for one reason or another. You know, I said he was because he was shook. He was just being, but, you know, you could say he was being picky.
Yeah.
But you can see, I guess there's some kind of conflict in him because he's not taking these ones that he knows that are sketchy. And then all of a sudden he gets, jumped is a bad word, was the only one I got, by these two people trying to get
cornered.
A ship, who turns out to be...
Yeah, he basically gets cornered. Turns out he's not really, working. Exactly, he's not really captured.
Right. Well, they had him right. They had him at gunpoint, but they really wasn't trying to capture him per se. They were just like trying to.
They basically steered him towards where Chewie was waiting for them.
Yeah, they basically steered him back to the Falcon so they can talk about what they were trying to do, which was basically a mission for the Resistance. And Leia, who Han ends up going. This was the part where that was kind of formulaic for me, because it was like, okay. You're trying to get them to do something for the Resistance. He and Leia kind of have their little tete-a-tete, and then he ends up doing it anyway. Although that one jab she gave him right before he left
was
pretty good. And then we see, well, hey, there's where the race part's coming, which I thought was thinking, oh, no, it's a wacky race. And then it's like, no, it's not. It's a, you know.
No, what was it? I was about to say, what was that DC title, the based on Hanna-Barbera last week?
Yeah, Wacky Raceland.
This was not a Wacky Raceland.
No, not even. Just like, So Han, so basically the mission that Han gets from the Resistance is they have informants placed in a couple of different places, and it just so happens that where these people are placed and all of the informants are getting killed, so they're trying to pull some people out. And it just so happens that three of the informants that they're trying to get to are along the race lines on these planets that that this race is going to. So they wanted to, the people that were trying to get Han wasn't trying to get him, they were trying to get the Falcon so they could do the mission themselves, and obviously Han's like, no one gets the Falcon but me. Then he goes to talk to Leia, and that's when they have their talk, and he meets this other guy who's involved in the mission, and then he enters the race. And then he goes to where the race is and meets other people, and you know the race pretty much starts after some banter in between these other people who've been pretty much trained for this one particular race all this time, and this one old racer that's been around.
Tim, so this is the part of the issue that really made me think of the Fast and the Furious. Is it Fast and Furious number 4 when they have to race for Braga?
No, 4. We'll see.
Four. I just can't remember if that's where they took
it. That was Fast and Furious.
Yeah, Fast and Furious. All right, so Fast and Furious, when they're racing for Braga, a couple of the racers start to try to brag. Like, remember that dude that was driving the yellow Mustang?
Right.
Some of the dialogue from this felt so much like it was Brian O'Connor walking through this, like, pit of, like, dirty drivers, you know?
That, USA did a marathon this past weekend. That's caught a couple of scenes from a couple of the episodes, a couple of the movies.
That's cool. That's funny. So
actually, I was about to say, one was on earlier tonight, which is funny you mentioned that.
Yeah, I think Furious 7 is on HBO right now, too.
Yeah.
So.
That's what it was.
But anyway, sorry for the aside, but we have had Fast and Furious discussions on the Comic Book Chronicles. Make sure to look for the Treasury Edition episodes where we talked about Furious 7.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, so the issue ends. This issue of Han Solo ends on a cliffhanger because everything goes south when they come out of hyperspace.
Or goes according to plan if you knew what the race was about before going into it. But yeah, definitely went south.
Exactly.
He didn't know what he was actually getting into.
Right. So that's where this issue ends. I like this. It was actually kind of a fun, you know, kind of a real snappy read for me. I was flipping constantly, and the art on this was pretty good too. I know that I think you guys were having discussions about some of the art offline of the Star Wars books,
right?
Specifically, the art on number 20,
right,
by Mike Mayhew being very photorealistic or photo referenced. And the Han Solo book, who does the art on this one? Who does the art on this one? I know I picked this up this week.
I know Marjorie Lewis writing it.
Yeah. I give her a lot of credit. I thought this was a pretty well-scripted book. Like I said, it was a very snappy read. Oh, Mark Brooks. I'm not used to seeing Mark Brooks doing interiors.
Insides. Yeah, I know.
It was his first time in a couple of years. He specifically came back for Star, I guess, to do this.
Han Solo?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, I like this. There's obviously a lot of SketchUp and photo, you know, like, you know, I think I've joked about this before with the Star Wars books. Growing up, you would never see this level of detail on the starships, you know, but with the aid of computer drafting and imagery, you know, you've got like a pitch perfect Millennium Falcon in all these shots. You know, and the artist has just one less thing to worry about. It's just about composing and the images around, you know, some of the really technical shots like the Millennium Falcon. So I like this book. I was pleasantly surprised.
Right.
But I've also been a big fan of some of the Star Wars spinoff books too. I like the Chewbacca one. I like the Princess Leia one. So maybe I'm just a sucker for that. For Marvel, Roddy, do you have any other Marvel books to talk about this week?
I got a couple of them. They could have waited for
Rapid Fire.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, if you want to wait for rapid fire, I wanted to just take care of the one last Marvel book I had because I was so pleasantly surprised by this, and I do not want to spoil this because you guys will absolutely have a blast reading this. You do not have to understand what's going on up until this point. I'm not going to spoil too much, but if you've been paying attention to our show, you know that in the last issue of Ant-Man, Cassie Lang has basically made a deal to regain a power set, and she's taken on a new costumed identity, and she's trying to take revenge on the family enemies, and that is the I'm trying to remember the last name. It is not Stain. That's Iron Man.
Cross.
Thank you, Darren Cross. So, you know, she's trying to take revenge upon the Cross family for stealing her Pym particle empowered heart, and Scott Lang is going in to get her. And Scott Lang decides he's going to form an Ocean's 11 type team and uses the Hench app to recruit a bunch of villains. Really low-level villains, and, you know, hijinks ensue, and you have to understand Nick Spencer is just telling just great, a great story. There's a great setup. There's a lot of great witty banter between panels, you know, moving from panel to panel. There's a great sequence in this issue with regards to a heist-type break-in. You have to read it to really appreciate it. Ramon Rosanas is the artist, and the Spencer Rosanas team is definitely clicking in this issue. There's a lot of really great stuff in here. This is a very clear candidate for Click of the Week for me. That's how good it was.
I'm always a disappointment with myself when there's a week of Ant-Man because I've let it fall kind of down in my pecking order of books to read before the show. Mm-hmm. And then one of you guys says how good it is. I read it over the weekend, and I'm like, oh, man, that was good. I wish I had probably picked that for my click of the week. So the same thing's going to happen this weekend, I'm sure. Even after the show, I'm probably going to read it because I don't have to go to bed early since I don't have work tomorrow.
Right.
And I'm going to be like, yeah, oh, man.
Yeah, usually I would have read it by now, but like things have been kind of moving and shaking. So yeah, I expected that this was probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I even meant to read the Star Wars books this week, or at least like Han Solo, since it was a number one. Mm-hmm. But nope.
It's all right. Okay, so I think Roddy's got some Marvel books he wants to do rapid fire. But if you want to move to DC, we can.
Yeah, let's knock some DC stuff out with the four number ones come out this week.
Two of them.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Rebirth. I didn't put that on my list. I forgot I read that.
Yeah, but that's sort of a number one, too, sort of.
Yeah, it's the Rebirth, or a.k.a. Yeah. A Zero issue.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, because I think the only other, like, Rebirth 8 in DC books that I'm kind of really curious about are the Titans ones, and maybe that Deathstroke whenever it comes out, but that's going to be a while.
Let me get that cover up. So, in this, it's sort of follows from the events of DC Universe.
We're talking about Titans Rebirth?
Yes, Titans Rebirth.
Boom, I got the alternate cover.
So it follows the events of the DC Universe Rebirth number one. And,
drawn by your man Brett Booth.
Yeah, and even picks up from the Flash Rebirth number one. Was it the Flash Rebirth or the Flash number one?
Yeah, was
Flash number one? Yeah, Flash number one, yep. Yeah, it goes straight from Flash number one.
Okay, yeah, from Flash number one. So Wally's gone off to find the Titans, his former teammates. He finds them, of course, and of course they don't recognize him because their memories have been altered. As he touches each one of them, it jogs memories. So we have the process of him touching each one and showing flashbacks to times and moments he spent with each one until they all remember. And then they set off to figure out, you know, who's been messing with them. That's pretty much it. Yeah, my man Brett Booth is on the art here, so I enjoyed the art in it a lot.
And inked by Norm Ratman. This is an Image reunion.
Yeah, I think Norman's been inking Brett through his DC run. So yeah, the whole dollhouse doing the colors. Yeah, the trio sticks together pretty well. Mm. I actually talked to Dollhouse, I think it was. I always get them mixed up. It was Dollhouse or Ratman I spoke to at two Heroes Cons before.
All right. So, I like this because it's sort of bringing my version, my favorite version of the Teen Titans together, because you at least have Nightwing, Wally West Flash, and Donna Troy. It's a shame that that Cyborg is now a Justice Leaguer and Beast Boy is somewhere. I don't know if they're going to incorporate him in this down the road, but yeah, this, you know, it's kind of fun to see this group of Titans get together, because honestly, the heart and soul of this group of Titans is Donna Troy, and you know, seeing her kind of, you know, reemerge as a viable character is pretty cool to me.
Hmm. Yeah, the
clarification, this comes after Flash Rebirth, because Flash number one doesn't come out until next week, right?
Oh, okay, that's me just misunderstanding the whole Rebirth thing. Like, I forget that there's zero issues.
Yeah.
So I guess in 2 weeks, Titans number one will come out, and we'll see how the story goes there.
Cool.
So has it pique your interest? Because I know you're a big Titan fan.
It seems like they're trying to refocus and put more more attention to the Titans brand. So I'm all for that.
I'm curious to keep reading this too.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
No, because it definitely had a nice spirit to it, you know?
Yeah, I want to see what happens as they start, you know, working on, as a team and doing things together.
Right. So did you guys catch the Rebirth Batman number one?
Yes.
Okay, so we won't spoil too much again for you, Roddy. I was able to pick up the Tim Sale cover, which is pretty cool. Tim Sale. So this is Tom King and David Finch going forth with their version of Batman. There's a couple of nice action sequences in this. Very interesting. Opening action sequence. It's very much a Bond type action sequence that basically spans the entire first issue, and we're introduced to new characters who are on the regular cover. I don't want to spoil who they are, but it's very interesting to meet them, because they don't reveal themselves until the end of the book. My best best highlight for me, honestly, Tim, and this is a mild spoiler, because it doesn't affect the story at all, but the appearance of a slightly modified Batman the Animated Series Batmobile was awesome! Tim knows what I'm talking about.
Hmm. Do I?
Oh, he doesn't! Oh, no! The youngin' doesn't know!
I read this issue a while ago, so I'm trying to remember exactly what all happened in it.
It's okay. I only just read this today, so that it's pretty fresh in my mind. Roddy, when you have an opportunity, take a look at it.
All right, we'll do.
I liked, I thought, so slight differences between King and Snyder, and at least a little bit of how they write sort of the Batman characters. I know under Snyder, it was a lot of, you know, Penny One and using code names. Here, they're a lot looser on the comm links.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mr. Thomas and Bruce, Alfred, little things like that I noticed. I guess not that big a deal.
I didn't notice it until you just mentioned it, and I guess you're, you know, it's weird that the one who was probably in a military setting a little bit more recently, I don't know if Snyder ever served, if ever, but you know, obviously we know that Tom King was an operative for the CIA, so you'd think that he'd be a little bit more he'd be more likely to use call signs.
Yeah. He is more late. He is a pretty laid back guy also, though, so.
That's true. That is true.
David Finch's art was the usual fare here.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, what's funny is that because of Fabok kind of occupying that same space as Finch,
right,
maybe Finch's art isn't as impressive as it maybe used to be, or as it once was.
I know. I did like how he used the panel structure of, like, moving from one panel to another, showing like Batman using like these different accessories on the airplane to like get aboard the airplane, and then to sort of steer the airplane, help guide it to the water.
Right.
Them reaching out to the Justice League but not being able to find anyone, and it's like, you know, this is my city, I'll, you know, take care of things.
Sure, and we see that he doesn't quite take care of things on his own. But that's for the next issue.
And then he's ready to die, because, hey, you'll kill Batman in the first issue, why don't you? Of course he doesn't die.
That's funny. All right. What else you got?
We had Superman number one.
I skimmed this, so I'm okay talking about it.
I liked it. Again, I've never been the biggest Superman fan, but just like with Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter on Action Comics, Tomasi and Gleason are doing a pretty good job on Superman books, or at least the Superman book, because Tomasi, is it? No, Jurgens is on Action Comics, I believe.
Okay. So this is a Rebirth issue, or is this a number one?
This is a number one. Yeah, we had the Rebirth two weeks ago.
Oh, for this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, all four issues, all the four D's had their Rebirth issues 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really? Okay. Yep. So yeah, it shows you how much I'm keeping track of that stuff. So this is the I guess it's probably the second example of how DC is going to move forward with a Super Son, and we see some of the things that come about with the existence of spoiler alert, mild spoiler alert, because you know there's already been a few issues with this storyline involved with the son of Lois and Clark. And, you know, this is sort of our first taste of how they're going to treat his development. And I liked it for that. I wasn't that big a fan of it. So I think Tim had a much higher opinion of it than I. But, I thought it was a pretty good first issue.
I like that the first arc is focusing on Superman's son, from the first issue, and then reading this sort of solicits in the future. They've made it known that the first arc involves his son, and then because it also sets up the Super Sons book, which hopefully will come out, is scheduled to come out later in the year with Damian and John Kent, Damian Wayne and Jonathan Kent.
Mm-hmm.
I say hopefully comes out because they've been known to announce stuff and then the books never come out. That happened in DCU when they started that initiative last year. John is still trying to get used to his developing powers. Something sort of terrible happens here that puts him in a foul mood. But then we meet a new neighbor of the, I was going to say the Kents, but they go by a different last name now while they're still in hiding. And Superman knows he has to step up and fill the void left by the new 52 Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's that.
Yeah.
Did anyone read Green Arrow? I heard good things about it. I just didn't get to it.
I like this more than the Rebirth issue.
No kidding.
But the Rebirth issue is the one that sold over like 90,000 copies, just to give you some.
So you're saying the big bucks in the seats.
Yeah, it's putting staking cash out of pockets.
Hmm.
So this picks up from the Rebirth issue where Black Canary is working with Green Arrow to research this sort of organization that's doing trading of people, the homeless and the poor, young, you know, women and children and whatnot. There's some talk amongst Black Canary and Green Arrow about, you know, well, actually, to go back to the beginning, they work together to bust this trading ring. Black Canary catches Green Arrow, you know, using his money to pay off cops and to pay informants and whatnot, and she starts questioning him about, you know, can he be this vigilante when he's part of the, you know, establishment and whatnot. Doesn't get too deep, so don't worry about it being too meta.
Yeah.
Green Arrow finds out that, like, his company might be involved in some of this. He goes to do some research, and then that's when shit starts in the fan. And then there's a surprise at the end that I won't spoil, but it's getting good.
Cool. I'm glad
The art's good. Otto Schmidt, the cover here is from one of the rotating artists that'll be, I guess, on the next arc, Juan Ferreria.
Okay, I pulled the Neil Adams variant.
Okay.
So I guess Red Skull Pyramid Head back there is the big bad or something?
He was the big bad in the Rebirth issue, at least.
Mm.
Yeah, and you see the woman down there doing the karate kick. That's Emiko, Oliver's sister, half-sister. Yeah, half-sister. Who's involved in the book? A mysterious ninja on the right. Hmm. Yeah. So, and then the final book was Green Arrows, plural, number one, where we have Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz.
Green Lanterns.
Yeah, I was about to say. Where?
You said Green Lanterns. You said Green Arrows. You're so high on Green Arrow.
I thought I said Lanterns.
When did we get multiple Green Arrows? Oh no.
I was going to say, where did she change? I thought she was a lantern.
It's from trying to get these covers up and talk at the same time.
Multitasking. Doug, yeah. Where are you? Dirt, PCN underscore Dirt, we need you. It's always something when we're down a man and a panel member and someone's got to do a double duty. I know you guys don't enjoy having to deal with these sound effects. So,
so they're the Green Lanterns of the Earth Sector. We see them working together to investigate some aliens on planet Earth. Then we also catch up with the Red Lanterns and find out what's going on with them. I guess it appears their members of their cult or whatever are dying off. We see some new powers exhibited by a member of the Green Lanterns here on the cover. And we see that there's a perhaps a new power ring in play somewhere.
Mm.
There's a this new guardian running around with something else in a stone box that's another potential weapon. So yeah, the art is all right from I think Robin Roska, something like that.
Roka?
Yeah, Roka.
Okay.
Sam Humphries again on coming over from Marvel to DC. I'm assuming he must be off his Marvel exclusive contract because all his Marvel books are over have ended, which were Star-Lord and Weird World.
Mm.
I read a couple of his books and whatnot, but he hasn't had anything that's really like grabbed my attention yet.
Right.
So this, I don't know what it is about Green Lantern, the franchise. It's, since Geoff Johns left, and granted, I didn't read much of his stuff before he left. I kind of took, started trying stuff out after he left.
Right.
That's when I finally started reading some DC stuff. But I'm just been kind of like, to it. So that's how I am with Green Lanterns. I like seeing Baz and Cruz as the leads in the book. But even like when Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns come out, I think next month, I'll read it and I'll probably be the same way, like kind of,
Yeah. I'm patiently waiting for them to really put together a good couple of stories to really, like hook me. I'm flipping through this. I'm not impressed, but I'm also not reading it very carefully, so I couldn't tell you what's going on. I'm going to try to give this a more careful read and get back to you and see what, see what I think.
Yeah. All right.
What else do we have? Anything? Bueller?
We might be in rapid
fire. Yeah, rapid review.
Yeah, I just have one more left.
Go rapid, go rapid.
I Hate Fairyland number 6.
So you've been digging this one?
Yeah. Let me bring the cover up. I'm mad I actually didn't get to another Image book that came back from break this week, which was Descender. That's been my book. But this was nice. I need a nice little comedic book, which I guess I could have read Ant-Man to get that too.
Yeah.
But I Hate Fairyland picks back up where... I can't even think of the chick's name in here. Gertrude, I think her name is. Since she killed the previous ruler of Fairyland, she has now taken over it and is the queen. She hates it because all she does is sit around ruling. There's no fun in that. She messes up a lot, gets a bunch of different people in different parts of Fairyland killed, and there's assassination attempts on her life. And then at the end, she gets out of it because after a year being the queen, I guess whatever ruling power comes down to judge her work and whatnot, they of course say that she did a shitty job and they take her power away from her. So she's not the queen anymore. So now she's happy. But now she still has to find a way home. So, and I enjoyed the letter page or the letter. Yeah, it was almost basically a letter page from Scotty Young, who's the writer and artist and creator. He talked about how he sort of debated doing an entire arc of, Gertrude being the queen and ruling and whatnot, but just decided that doesn't fit the character much. Sometimes a character takes you where the story needs to go, and this was like one of those times. I was like, I can respect that.
Sure.
Yeah, so.
Why not?
I Hate Fairyland.
But you hear? Oh, no. I don't know if it's... But you hear? I don't know if this is true or not, but here, that's why he canceled being here at Heroes Con, because he's trying to finish up this book. Not finish up, but catch up on the book. So.
Yeah, it's kind of bummed I thought he wasn't going to be there.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man. So.
All right.
What y'all got? I can bring up covers.
Well, I'll go ahead and quickly hit Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat number 7. I believe this was the end of an arc where... Patsy was having trouble from her rival, Hedy, who basically put out all her old books without her knowledge. because she had all the rights and stuff. So Patsy was trying to get him back, and she went through She-Hulk, you know, trying to help her out on the legal end. And Hedy ended up trying to get dirt on Patsy by going to Jessica Jones to get her to try to dig up dirt, which he found. But then Jessica went to Patsy to tell her about this, and then they went to, you know, go try to get some dirt on Hedy. It went back to her apartment. They got caught. And then something came up to where they found another loophole. She-Hulk found another loophole. And at the end of this, we now have Patsy. Now, I guess she has money now because she didn't at the beginning of this arc. You know, she was opening a simp agency, which she still is. But now all of the rights and the books, all of the rights for the books that has come out and will be coming out from her old adventures has reverted back to Patsy because of this legal loophole. So that's where this pretty much ends, and that, like I said, it was the end of the arc. It was pretty amusing. You know, this book is kind of more fun, kind of light, real light book. There's no real heavy action to it or nothing real serious, you know. But it's cool. There was one part, though, that I don't know if they're going to address this or not, where Patsy meets Jessica Jones, who apparently they knew each other already because, you know, it's Marvel and people, whatever. But Patsy didn't recognize her, nor Luke Cage, you know, whom she all know. And apparently it was like, yeah, we was trying to, you know, like, yeah, you should know you were at the wedding and this and that and the other. And like, she would remember that, but she didn't. So maybe they're going to address that, and, you know, her memory lapses, you know, and they also bring up the fact that she was, you know, she had died once. That's okay. Kind of a thing that's kind of coming back and forth during the whole arc. So maybe some of that's going to come back up. But yeah, I saw that. It was a pretty good issue.
All right.
And then the last one I have is, which I probably shouldn't do, but I'm going to at least mention it. Vault Loki number one. We were kind of, I think there was a couple of us that when we found out about this were intrigued about this book because of the premise. So what we have here is, first it starts off like some years ago where apparently the Avengers was fighting somebody, but you never really see who at the beginning, or maybe it didn't, I don't remember them saying. But we see the Avengers basically saying, hey, you know we've messed up the red neighborhood, and here's some money from the Stark Foundation given to the city to help clean up this mess. And then you see in the crowd a young family, you know, that was apparently displaced because of this. Then it comes to some years later to where you see this young lady grilling the governor, who was also at that thing, who also received the money back a few years earlier, getting grilled on stuff, and then this reporter just happens to come along and say, hey, all that money that, you know, some of that money that you took that was supposed to help rebuild didn't always get, you know, it's basically some investigative reporting going on, and the governor got busted by this young lady, who apparently is the same young lady from the beginning of the book, who was grown up and become a reporter. Then you cut again to, I guess, a now-ish type thing where she's supposedly covering a political debate, which gets interrupted by Hydra. And this person that she was chatting with, who seems slightly out of place but was there, looks like they were there for a reason, who turned out to be Loki, who ends up thwarting the assassination attempt, whether by mistake or not. You know, he just happened to be there in disguise and then, you know, just took care of things out of disguise. And then reporters just started saying, hey, you know, what's your political scans doing? That's not who you vote for. And then, of course, as the premise of the book goes, people start putting Loki in the limelight as a, you know, political possible candidate. But he was at first saying he wasn't really running. He was just kind of, he was basically just there just to see the process because he found it amusing and whatnot. And then he gets to the point to where it was like he was on Saturday Night Live and he's doing this and that, you know, making a whole lot of TV appearances and this and that and the other. And people start kind of dropping his name in the political ring, even though he at first said he wasn't going to do it. But when the first time that he mentioned it, it was like he straight up told everybody, it was like, yeah, I could run this country because I would lie to you straight to your face.
Oh, no.
And you love it.
So
then from that, that's where the ball started rolling and rolling and rolling to where he actually considers getting into the race. And this young reporter who we come back to has been against this and him because apparently we found out later on that it was he that the Avengers were fighting when her building got destroyed. Mm. So she's got beef with him. So Loki was in the middle of a debate, and then she calls in to kind of, you know, you know how they do, like on CNN, you have people just railing against the people that's on the show for whatever mm-hmm. reason, but I think he was on, I can't remember what show he was actually on. And then he just pops over to her apartment to say, hey, look, I didn't have intentions to run, but now I kind of do, and, you know, he was trying to apologize for destroying the apartment, getting this lady's, you know, apartment back in the day, and this and that and the other, and she was trying to get her to help him with the campaign, which she was like, no at first, until he finishes talking, and then she reluctantly does go to try to help him. Okay. But somewhere in between there happens to where she started writing something for him that didn't get published, but somehow got out as something totally different and just blew up. And at the end of this issue, we had Thor come knocking on the door with this paper because she woke up and all of a sudden she was getting texted and pinged about this article she supposed to wrote that she actually didn't, because she even looked at the article and was like, what the heck is this about? And then mm-hmm. Thor comes busting into the door talking about, what the heck, you know, basically, what is this? And then that's where the issue ends. So mm-hmm. it's possible that Loki may have actually played her with him trying to get her to help him with with his campaign, but we do not know. There was also an appearance by Angela, who apparently is on Loki's campaign trail in some kind of capacity, because she kind of dropped by and told the girl to go to this place and whatnot, and that was before the article came out and whatnot, so we don't know what that is, but at least I don't remember, because I kind of skimmed through that part. So it was, like I said, it was an interesting enough read. It was kind of slightly slow to pick up, because you weren't sure what was going on until you start seeing, you know, Loki kind of out there. Okay. And the art was really kind of weird, especially, like, I wish I could pull it up, because it's not letting me do a screen share, but the art, especially Loki in a couple of spots, just looks like your drunk uncle in a Loki costume.
Isn't it a jam work where there's multiple artists on this book?
It must be, because...
I flipped through it very quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I could pull up my review copy to see.
Because there was a couple of different pages. That's what it looked like to me. He looks different from this page to a couple pages later. So that's what I was thinking was the case, but I don't know.
Well, in the meantime...
They're already using multiple artists on the number one issue?
I don't know. Like I said, I'm flipping through this real quick. It just looks like there's some weird art changes in a couple of the...
Oh, no, it's not. It's just one, Langdon Foss.
Yeah, the one dude, yeah.
Okay.
But it still looks weird. Here, let me see if this is going to play real quick, because I want to show, like, so you see that art on this cover. Never mind, because cover art is not always the same as Zane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see right. this Loki right here that I'm showing up for the people on video.
Right.
That's one. And then a couple of pages later, actually, it's not even a couple of pages later, a page later, you get this. And then the page after that, you get, and this is where I got drunk Uncle Loki.
Okay, I gotcha. Well, yeah, maybe it's just the, you know, a slight inconsistency with the artist.
Possible.
That sounds.
But outside of that, like, it wasn't nothing terribly jarring. Outside of that, it was just that those kind of were weird. Like, even after that, you see him, you know, see him looking different in the different panels. But like you said, it could be descriptions with the dude. Who knows? Yeah.
All right.
But like I said, I will check out the next issue just to see what it was, because I was kind of curious as to what this book was going to be, and I'm kind of wishing that it was like somebody like Al Ewing or someone writing this mm-hmm. book, because I feel like, you know, after writing Agent of Asgard, I would have been curious to see how he was done on this book, and I'm trying not to take away anything from the person writing this book, but, you know.
Gotcha.
This was supposed to have been Tom King.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was his idea.
Oh, okay.
Originally.
Right.
Then someone decided to go DC exclusive.
Ah.
So, like I said, I wish I got the second issue to see what's up, but for the time being, like, yeah, it's all right, but it didn't come out like I thought it was. I mean, maybe I had different expectations than what this book was supposed to originally be anyway.
Okay. All right. So, do we have anything left? We do clicks of the week and then do the ad?
Sure.
All right.
I guess a slow week. It's kind of a slow week, seems like.
Well, I mean, it was kind of some disappointing books, you know?
Yeah, like, I was going to say, no, nothing like that super excited anyone.
Yeah, like, no, I mean, I love, mine is easy. Mine is Astonishing Ant-Man number 9.
Yeah, it's Ant-Man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mine is Astonishing Ant-Man number 9. Easy, easy peasy. I think we were all disappointed. We were let down by the second issue of Civil War 2, so.
Yeah. Right,
and I didn't read all of the books that I expected to.
Mm-hmm.
This week, so probably if I had like Spider-Gwen or something else, or even had read Ant-Man, I probably would have joined you on that one.
Right.
I'm going with I Hate Fairyland number 6.
Wow.
Okay.
Righty.
Well, I guess I'll go with Yeah, nothing really stood out to me this week, but I guess I will go with the Star Wars fan. I'll go with Star Wars Han Solo number one.
Nice, that's a good pick.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
I like that pick. That's a good pick.
Yeah, we spread it around.
Yeah, that's good. All right, so we will get into our first ad read of the night. Let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today.
Should have had me some Skull Candies. Probably wouldn't have had the feedback from earlier.
All right, so on to the Cinematic News of the Week. Marvel Scarlet is in development to be picked up at Cinemax, co-created by Brian Michael Bendis. So I guess he'll be joining Outcast, which has begun. Should be on like its third week tomorrow. It comes on Fridays on Cinemat. So I watched a little bit of the first episode of that. DC announced his Superhero Girls full-length animated film with a trailer. So it will be called DC Superhero Girls Hero of the Year. So if you're not familiar with it, it's DC Superhero Girls. It has been a sort of short animated series on YouTube of taking the DC heroines, putting them in sort of like high school setting. I think they're going to get a feature on like Boomerang or Cartoon Network sometime this year, but they're also going to have their own DVD movie. So good for them. Got them casting a new Poison Ivy for season 3 with expanded role.
What was wrong with the other one?
I don't know who the other one was.
Oh, too young. Okay.
Yeah, they're basically trying to go for, they're trying to get closer to the Poison Ivy we would actually know.
Gotcha.
But Bruce is young, so shouldn't Poison Ivy be?
Yeah, well, yeah, and I mean, at this point, she is, but the way they have her in the show, she's not what we would know her to be.
Yeah,
outside of the stage, she knows plans, but
right.
That's why I can't get into Gotham.
Yeah, the reason why I'm getting into it is not necessarily for the actual story, it's just for the crazy acting.
The crazy acting.
Yeah,
like, it's like Batman's not even a teenager yet, or very early in his teen years, and then everyone else is super older than him.
Yeah, pretty much. But we do have a young Michelle Pfeiffer, so we got that.
Yeah. Donald Glover reportedly joining the cast of Spider-Man Homecoming.
Not as Miles Morales, maybe? We don't know.
He's a, you know what's funny is I didn't realize the guy was like 32.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's old.
Oh, I was about to say he's not old to me, but...
Yeah, he's either,
but... But no, but what's funny is that having seen him most recently in The Martian as steely-eyed missile man Rich Purnell, you know, you see him, and yeah, he comes off young in that. But if you try to put him next to Tom Holland, he's not going to be very young. So I think that's really where his character, whatever character he ends up playing, it could be Miles' dad at this point, you know, or his uncle, the Prowler.
Oh, is that who his uncle was, the Prowler?
Yeah, in the Ultimate universe.
Kobe Brown?
Yep.
Hmm.
And then the Prowler is currently helping Spider-Man and Amazing
Correct.
Spider-Man. Okay, interesting. I did not know that.
Obviously, you know, in the original Marvel continuity, I think they were a little closer in age. You know, as Peter was in his 20s, the Prowler came along. I think they were probably approximately, you know, they weren't that far apart in age. Whereas at this point, I mean, in reality, they're more than 10 years apart, but in the movies, they might even be more because they're playing Tom Holland off as a mid-teenager. So.
And I think there was some other casting news. The guy that everyone thought was going to be Genki, the director came out and said, he's not playing Genki. Stop jumping to conclusions, fanboys. And websites. Legends of Tomorrow adds Citizen Steel to the cast.
And I say to myself, who?
Yeah, wait, hold on. There we go.
We need Dirt to help us on Justice Society.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Canon. So Nick Zano from Minority Report.
Okay, sure.
Playing Dr. Nate Haywood, the historian who in the comics becomes the hero Citizen Steel. And Arrow adds Nerve Vigilante for season 5. DC's Vigilante. And Rick Gonzalez.
Say who?
No, Vigilante has been around, but
he was in Justice League United, Unlimited.
Oh, that helps.
Yeah, the cowboy. I had to
learn that too. Now that you say that, I do remember. Yeah, okay.
I love that Roddy on our sheet adds a note about where Vigilante was first introduced. That's where I remember him from. There was a... he was a guest character in the New Teen Titans, the Wolfman Perez New Teen Titans, and they introduced him. He's kind of like a Punisher type, but you know, he guest appears in the New Teen Titans.
But wait, okay. If I remember correctly, the Vigilante in Justice League United was like the two-gun kid.
Yeah, there's been, I think there's multiple characters called the Vigilante in DC continuity.
Okay, sure.
Right. And so, also for Arrow, Rick Gonzalez is going to play Wild Dog.
Okay, that's one where I'm like this.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, sure.
They're digging deep because they can't put any of the big guns on these shows.
Yeah.
It's the truth.
And so that's it for the cinematic news.
Although there is some cinematic news right here at the beginning of the news.
There is?
Yes, Comic-Con 2016, Marvel Studios will attend after all.
Oh, yeah.
Yay!
So, calm your horses, or whatever the saying goes.
Yep.
Marvel Sanaa Aminat selected for United States Women's Summit.
Yeah.
I'm going to meet her one day.
Oh, really. She's awesome. I've met her. She's very awesome.
I hate you.
She's small, but she's very cute, too. Oh, there goes the sexism. But
facts. Not sexism.
Exactly. But no, in all seriousness, that's pretty cool. I have an old classmate from high school who was at that summit at the White House, and I believe it was at the White House, hosted by the First Lady, and I saw some pictures, and that's huge that there is a member of Marvel Comics editorial there representing at this summit. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, she's done a couple things with the White House.
Right. That's
pretty cool. So now we get into the gaming news, since it was E3 week.
Oh, you guys take over now. I'll sit back and listen.
I'm just reading. I have checked out some trailers and whatnot, and of course, always this time of year has me debating whether or not I want to get back into playing video games or not.
Do you have a PS4?
No.
Or Xbox One?
No.
Oh, okay, so you're in the same boat I am. We're a generation behind.
I have the previous generation of both systems. 360 and Xbox One.
Well, the Xbox and the PS4 are both coming out with new versions. They dropped the price again of the Xbox One, so you can get one now, or you can wait till the new version come out and get that one then, which is supposed to be smaller.
Are the new versions going to be reduced price, or are they going to be the regular price?
The new Xbox One is going to be slightly cheaper than the original, because I think they said $299 for the price, but that's also giving it room to drop down a price later on. Because basically it's a new version that's a little smaller and supposedly a little more powerful. The PS4 version is probably going to be the same price as it is now, which I'm not sure what it is.
Both of them are $400 or $300, right?
Anyway. At this point, Xbox One just dropped to $250 again, but that's probably not going to last that long. And that's for the version that's just been out for a minute. And whenever this new version comes out, it's going to be $300. I think the going rate is probably like $300 for both at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Batman is coming to PlayStation VR this October.
Yeah, we don't know anything too much about it. We just saw, during E3, they usually have little sections of stuff, of upcoming things, and they had a VR section on at the Sony press conference, and this was part of that. Like I said, we don't know. It looks to be something from Arkham, like Rocksteady, who did the Arkham games, is doing this. We don't know if it's going to be an actual game or just like, hey, you're going to be able to walk around Arkham with, as Batman. And it's going to be on PlayStation VR. So.
Which I know nothing about, but from the name, I can assume it's their PlayStation VR setup.
Yeah, it's their all you need is a PlayStation 4 and these things you got VR, because supposedly the PlayStation 4 is VR capable.
So just like Xbox One has the Kinect, I guess,
had PlayStation. Kinect. Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say had, because they haven't really been touting too much on the Kinect the last couple of years.
Yeah, I guess they haven't.
Yeah.
So PlayStation... Ooh. The VR, we'll see if that goes the way of the Kinect or not.
Nah, people are, VR being what it is in the last year or two, and with the other VR gears and whatnot coming out, I don't, and it's being supported, I don't think it's going to end soon. they just need to have games. And it sounds like, especially with the PlayStation VR, just sounds like they're going to have like 50 games. I'm doing air quotes here because we don't know if they're all actually going to be games or not. But by the end of the year, there's supposed to be 50 games for the VR, the PlayStation VR, including this.
Okay. Spider-Man's coming to PlayStation 4.
Yes. Interesting. Yeah. Actually, well, we're expecting it to be possibly a little bit good because it's being made by Insomniac, makers of Ratchet & Clank and Sunset Overdrive.
Now, did they do that infamous game?
No, that's Sucker Punch. Sucker Punch was actually, I think this might be that same game, but Insomniac took over for them because, yeah, Sucker Punch was supposed to be making that game. And if they had, that would have been dope because, you know, if you play Infamous, they had kind of like, you know, there were some powers they had that could have been translated real easily.
Yeah, so I had the first Infamous. I actually need to see if I still have it because I think I loaned it to a friend, but then I downloaded the digital copy, I think.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you have Players Plus, you can probably still get it, and you got it then. But
so what's interesting about this Spider-Man game is Spider-Man's got entirely new costume in it, at least from the images and video they showed.
Yeah, there was no gameplay show. You just saw a trailer with him doing some swinging, and the costume was different.
Big white spider emblem.
Yeah, I'm like, that's weird, but okay, sure.
People are speculating, is that going to be Tom Holland's Spider-Man suit in Spider-Man Homecoming, perhaps?
That's insane. That's insane.
Oh, we've got Agent 70 back.
I was listening. That's insane. Why on earth would they do that huge white emblem on the costume in the movie?
I was talking to someone about it. And I was like, just because it's so large, it kind of overwhelming. If it was like a smaller white emblem, it'd probably be all right.
Well, wait, yeah. doesn't Peter's suit now kind of have a glowing chest?
It's got a glowing chest thing for no explicable reason.
Right.
They even made fun of it in an issue, I think.
So maybe it's a play off of that. We don't know.
Star Wars Battlefront X-Wing VR missions revealed.
I am fucking excited about this.
Is every game from here till 2020 going to have like VR in the name?
No, not ever. Not all of them. But you'll see some big ones. And this one is what it sounds like. This is basically, like, Battlefront is already out, and you're going to be playing. I think there may be some X-Wing missions already in it, if I'm pretty certain it is. And I think this is just slicing some of those out. So it's not like you may or may not be getting brand new stuff. I don't know, because I haven't played Battlefront, and I was talking to a friend of mine last night who just bought it, and I don't know. I was hyped to go and get it, but it's a Battlefront game, and I'm not really a big third-person, first-person shooter fan. But that game looks great. If anything else, if you played Battlefield, you know, any of the Battlefield games, it plays just like that, except for Star Wars.
Yeah, I heard the Battlefront Star Wars game wasn't all it was cracked up to be.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's got the trappings, it's got the sounds you want, it's got the places you want. I think they're adding Cloud City and Lando and an expansion coming up, you know. But on the surface, unless you like those type of games, then hey, it'll appeal to you.
Let's see, Lego Star Wars Force Awakens demo available on PSN.
Yep, played a little bit of that. It's a Lego Star Wars game. They got there was basically little slides of the sessions. You know, you got the Lego characters running around doing what they do. You got basically audio clips from this film. You know, at various points where they should apply that the characters would say. You know, it's cute. If you like those Lego games, this one's probably going to be another good one.
Star Trek Bridge crew brings the Starfleet experience to virtual reality.
And speaking of fucking excited.
Oh, no.
This one also. During one of the press conferences this came out, they had like LeVar Burton, Jerry Ryan, and Carl Urban playing this. And they seemed kind of excited about this. And basically what this is, as the name would imply, you are basically like one person is the character. It's all in VR. So you got one person the character, you got one person engineer, one person doing this. And you're basically controlling the ship. So one person has the helm, one person has, doing the shields and the targeting and the weaponry, all that kind of stuff. It looks pretty cool. There's a mobile game called Space Team that's kind of have a similar vibe to it, but this is taken to the next level, as they say. So, I'm excited for this.
Apparently so. Apparently so. You know, we have Roddy Cat dropping F-bombs on the show when it comes to E3 announcements. Come on now. He's got to be excited.
I do that in real life on a regular, so this is...
There you go. All right, what do we have next? We have Bruce Wayne stealing the show as Batman. Come on, tell me about it, guys.
Okay, so Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, there's a new Telltale game. If not to be confused with Travel Sales, who does the Lego Star Wars, who loves Lego games, but there is a series of games like the Walking Dead game, there's a Borderlands game, there's a bunch of these games that are out now. Now they've got a Batman one coming out, and apparently you're going to be playing as Bruce Wayne as part of it. And there was a demo of it at E3, and Troy Baker is doing the sound like he's the voice of Batman this time.
I like how people get just as excited about video game stuff as I do about comics. Mm-hmm. Gets me excited. Sure. I like seeing people excited about their passions.
Hey,
makes
you
me
want to
get into, makes me want to get into gaming again. Like I said,
come on. There's the Venn diagram for people who like comic books and video games are pretty. It's almost a solid line. I mean, yeah. It's a solid circle.
I was just going to say though that there's professional video game teams out there. Come on, this is a serious business, the same way comics is. So
I saw I came home Tuesday, I think, and esports was on.
Yeah.
ESPN2, Madden 16 Championship.
Yeah, that's right. They did have that then. Yeah. Which also reminds me, there was a night before last, or night. It was during one of the press conferences they had. They had a Battlefield demo of the new Battlefield game come out, and it was like Snoop Dogg was there, and Tyrese, and Terry Crews, and the game, and they had them playing it, which was just weird all in itself. And I think Jamie Foxx was like, he was high as hell, but it's just crazy. That's how gaming is now.
Yeah,
but anyway,
Batman Day returns for a third year with signings and more, and that's going to be on September 17th.
Okay.
So free Batman stuff, and head to your comic book shops and enjoy the day.
Is there any significance to that day? Is that like the first Batman comic or something? Or is that just a day they picked?
It's the official holiday and celebration of the Caped Crusader and his 75-plus years of existence.
Because like I guess one, didn't they do one in like June of like last year or something?
Yeah, I know they did it last year.
Couldn't tell you.
I guess this is the third year of them doing it, so obviously sure. They've done it a couple times. Avatar Last Airbender, Serenity, get adult coloring books.
Nice.
Because everybody has a comic book. I think Comic Con is about to have a comic book in a few months.
Sure, why not?
So, like I said,
I was going to say, I picked up the Scotty Young one. Go on. I'm going to pick up the coloring book I got.
I got Adam Black for my birthday, and April got me
the Civil War one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I picked up the Young Marvel by Scotty Young.
I saw that one in my comic store, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
How much was it?
$9.99.
Okay, yeah, I was going
to say, not that much.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a price from $10. I know the Deadpool one was $10.
Mm-hmm.
Funko Diamond ACD Ultra Pro Side Take Hastings Hits.
Yeah,
we got this is what we're talking about, right, online.
Yeah, shout out to Matt Ray97 who passed this along to us. I guess, Hastings owns all of these or has stake in all of these companies?
I think the gist of it is Hastings is, what I did not know is that Hastings is itself kind of a chain geek/nerd store.
Right.
Right? They sell lots of comics and books and movies and music under one roof. And I did not realize that this was a chain that had stores spread out across the country. Obviously,
in this country?
What's that?
In this country?
Yeah, that was my understanding, is that they were across they were based in, I think, Arizona or New Mexico, and I think they might have been on the West Coast and across the Midwest, maybe even in like parts of the South, but I'm not sure if you guys had ever seen, because you guys talk about other chain-type stores, but not this one.
Right.
I didn't really look into it, but my understanding is that it was a chain store, but it is filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, so some of the creditors and some of the company's vendors who may get hung out to dry include Funko, the manufacturer of the bobblehead and the vinyl figures, and Diamond Book Distributors, who is obviously the primary comic book distributor. So, this could be a potentially big hit for these businesses that we rely so much on for the product that we enjoy. And I'm also leaving out Penguin Random House, which is a major publishing arm.
Right, yeah. Matt Lang, Dirt, and I were still talking about this when he brought it up, and he was like, well, they're already to the point to where they would probably end up, they don't need to be cleaving some of these companies off to get to reclaim some of the debt. And we were just thinking about, like, who could and would take some of these up?
Right. You know, especially with these, my understanding is that they actually have brick and mortar locations, and these locations need to be filled. You know, someone's got to pay that rent. So, you know, it's interesting. And in terms of the whatchamacallit, what's in stock, you know, the of this product, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the stock maybe doesn't find itself onto like dollar store shelves at some point, you know, as they're being liquidated.
Right. And I was thinking, it's like, so GameStop got brought up. It's like, one, they already got a bunch of resources, but they were probably taking Funko stuff because they already bought ThinkGeek and they already have a couple stores of that. So they could just, and I think they're already selling Pop stuff anyway, so they'd probably take that.
Right.
And just to fill in all the ThinkGeek stuff.
Sure.
Penguin probably could go to, if they would take it, even though this would probably put them in some trouble, Amazon could probably take them because they're, you know, into some publishing already.
Sure. Well, I was about to say Amazon could take a lot of this stuff. So, but you know, at pennies on the dollar. But
we can get that's dropping a bucket to pay all this stuff off.
Yeah. Shout out to at Matt Wang 97 for pointing out one of the business one side of the business that we don't always look at. But you know, when it comes down to it, these small ripples can cause big waves.
Totally.
And finally, the Heroic Girls Summer Reading Program wants more kids and parents to read comics.
That's awesome.
And basically, it looks like there's an incentive to do this. So it's like, kind of skimming through this one when I put it in there, but it's almost like they give you a prize for doing stuff. So you have to basically, you get some books, you read them, then you do like reports on them, and you could possibly get prizes for doing that. So it's kind of like you get homework for reading comics. So, you know. Plus it helps them, you know, people getting to read.
Cool. Always a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
All right. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in to tonight's Comic Book Chronicles.
I think we probably need to get an ad read in.
Yep.
All right, so last ad read of the night, keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc., etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment. Dollar bills, y'all. That helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through cspn.us. Do it today.
Make sure to follow us on our Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. RoddyCat is at RoddyCat and at NewsNerdsNeed.
We are farmers. Pump, 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 pump.
Nice.
Agent 70 is at Agent_70 on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
And Dirt is at PCN_Dirt, and go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. And with that, we will see you at HeroesCon 2016.
Post-HeroesCon, yes. Oh, yes, you guys will be seen at HeroesCon 2016.
Yes, after we hang up here, I just realized I need to get comics together to take to get signed and whatnot.
Oh, shit. Look at that. We got Roddy just dropping bombs left and right on this show because of Heroes Con.
And I'm not even drinking. That's bad.
Well, last night or two nights ago, I went through the guest list and jotted down who all I want to talk to, and so now I need to go find books from them people.
And you know what? I did that, too, and I do just remember where I left my books.
Home.
Yeah, well, you know, that where I, because I had them set aside so I could put them in this other bag that I had, and I totally forgot them, so, jeez.
Where did I put that? Because, well, I did a, oh, there it is. He was kind of guest list. Cool. So, yes. So, I'm looking forward to that. So, catch us next week as we recap, and we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey! Would you believe it? It's done.